Okay. All right. Alexis, are you ready?
I am.
That was great. That was so much fun. I could have talked to you forever. I need to get your number. We need to be friends, just FYI. Okay. All right. So let's take a look at our room. Anybody who has questions, if you could just put in a speaker request. I guess while we're waiting for that to happen, I did have a question, something else that I wanted to talk to you about. You had mentioned just the news coverage if a black man is murdered or if a black woman is murdered. And we have in Canada here, I'm sure that it's the same, but what has a spotlight on its on right now is missing or murdered Indigenous women and how they're never reported, they're never reported on, nobody talks about it. There's tens of thousands of Indigenous women who go missing in the country, and there's no record or police case files that stay opened. And I remember, I don't know, I was watching something, and they did a comparison of a little black girl in the States going missing, and compared her to JonBenet Ramsey, and how the amount of coverage that case got. Compared to, one line in a local news broadcast for the little black girl who had gone missing around the same time. So I guess my question with that big preamble is what role do you think we can play in bringing attention to issues like this, particularly around young women and girls?
No, that's such a great question. As you're talking, I immediately, think about what John Wall did when, there was something like 30 or 40, black young women that disappeared out of DC, and he kept trying to bring it to the forefront. Like, or why are we not talking about the fact that these women are disappearing and their families are going to the police and no one's looking for them and there's no Amber Alerts and all the things. And so I would just say, as crazy as it sounds, it's going back to just raising the awareness, and like people pay attention when people that have influence bring it up. And so, I don't know any other way now in the society that we live in to really raise things to the forefront of the attention of the media unless there's folks that we can get engaged around these issues. And so that would be my suggestion is that, how do we activate people to see that this is such a problem that's not being covered for, a multitude of reasons. Like you said, it's Indigenous women, it's Black women, it's women in general. And our value isn't seen the same, nor is the support seen, given in the same way. So how do we help to draw attention using the influencers that say they care about these issues and help them help us bring it to the forefront?
Absolutely. Emily, we'll bring you up. And what's your question for Alexis?
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much to all of you for having such a fascinating conversation. Pleased to, quote unquote, meet you, Alexis. So I am just curious when it comes to the different things that you've worked on so far. One of the storylines that also came out of this past year and the influence that athletes, not just NBA players, but, oh my God, why am I just blanking on his name? Anyway, athletes have used influence more locally to help turn like arenas into polling places this past year during the 2020 election. So what kind of role do you play when it comes to something that's more on a local basis? Maybe it's just like a one-off relationship with an athlete who's trying to influence like the government in the town or the like in the city or the state where they're located. Or what kind of partners do you work with when it comes to kind of more localized efforts rather than something specific to, the efforts that the league might be doing as a whole? Or, the players have come together maybe through the Players Association or something like that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question, Emily. My role is to be very hands-on, so I'll give an example. I have clients, in Philly markets and Miami markets and Milwaukee, kind of all over. And my job is to help them really kind of figure out again the role that they want to play. And so when it comes to things that are local, it's getting them connected very directly to the local government. And so, you know, in a place like Georgia, is getting them connected to the movers and shakers that are actually getting the bills and the laws changed in Georgia and figuring out what level of engagement makes sense. Always being very respectful of the fact that these are guys that are, you know, they have a job, right? So not to say that, you know, obviously they're doing both, but their schedules are crazy, their travel's crazy. So sometimes it is, you know, I just want to get on some phone calls and listen how I could be helpful and figure out if that's supporting on social media. Sometimes it's, you know, conversations that I'm doing right now around the summertime. So like, as soon as the season's up, you're about to see us out in these streets, right? You're going to see the work that I'm doing now with them, you know, really play out in the summertime. And so it's really about being very intentional about creating a plan. And so my job is to help them figure out the level of engagement they want to have, the actual impact they're trying to make. I have a client that is, you know, donating money in the social impact space to various organizations. And my job is to help find those organizations and ensure that they are getting the resources that they need, but that also that, you know, it's not just a one-off. So like, what's the community story at play? Who is it going to affect? What's the impact going to be? How can we not just do make impact with one player? Are there other opportunities to engage other players, brands, some of their sponsors and partners? So it really is a holistic approach, my role in the way to make an impact in the local level. So it's really the strategic advisory and then the execution of it and then helping them be connected to the right people. And sometimes, you know, as we just talked about with the missing Indigenous, you know, women, it's like you got to get other people activated, right? So you as one person is good, but you in a community of people that care about this is great. And so that's another thing that I do within the kinship is looking amongst, you know, my network to see how we can mobilize, not just with the issue on the back of one person, but with a few people carrying the weight of the importance of these issues and the importance of whatever that local issue is that people are trying to make an impact in. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you so much. I work for a nonprofit here in DC. We're one of the largest grant makers in the region. And so I was, you know, the ways that you just talked about, how do we connect with different entities, you know, whether it's individuals, corporations, other foundations, et cetera, in order to be able to figure out like where, when we come together, where money can do the most good, where voices are what's needed, where action is what's needed, and like to distribute those things accordingly is something that, you know, I'm watching happen in a lot of ways. And so it's fascinating to me in the other places that happens. Sport is just one avenue in which, you know, all of these things occur, and it gets a lot of attention because we all love it. But to see, to hear from someone who's actually making sure that is what's happening, because it doesn't happen on its own. But to hear from someone who's actually like making sure that it becomes part of the conversation is really enlightening and special. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Emily. Wayne, you're next.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
I'm good.
I had two questions for you. One is, I'm a big mental health advocate, and you know, Trish said it so well today, but why do you think mental health is so important in 2021 for kids that look like you?
You know, I think because we haven't, I mean, so you just said it, that look like us, right? So let's talk a little bit about just the stigma in the Black community around mental health. You know, we are a product of our environment, and oftentimes growing up, you know, the idea of having therapy and things like that just weren't in our households. For a variety of reasons, and one of which that people don't want to highlight as much is just the fact that we didn't have the resources for those things, right? And so oftentimes people say, oh, well, you know, in the Black community, they don't believe in therapy. And it's like, well, we don't believe in something that we didn't have access to, nor could we afford. And I know, you know, my parents' generation, the generation before that, just were never exposed to things like that and didn't, you know, again, didn't have the access to it. And so I think there's a generational historical context to that. I think, you know, from a cultural standpoint, you know, I know in my household, it was like, keep your family business in your family and don't tell people your business. And like, there's all that kind of stuff. So then you have the cultural aspect of it. But I think more important now than ever is that we've got this, you know, years and generations and centuries of trauma. And so we've got, if you want to speak directly to why it's so important in 2021, it's, I don't know about you, but I'm traumatized, right? I am fully beyond the emotional capacity to continue to be able to handle seeing people that look like me be murdered with no consequence. And so when that happens time and time again for people that look like us, you know, I'm grown. I'm you know, damn near 40 years old. And so I've got coping mechanisms that are different. But for our young people, imagine what that's like, right? Imagine being 10 and 12 and 14. Imagine being Tamir Rice's age or any of the other ages of these people that are playing out in parks and being murdered, again, with no consequence. Imagine how that affects your psyche. And so that's why I think mental health for young people that look like us is more important now than ever, because we need to be able to talk through what that feels like to see these images, to feel like there's no value to our life, to talk through how that then can spiral into not feeling value in your life in so many other ways that it causes self-destruction, or that you don't take advantage or have opportunities because you feel like you won't live long enough to take advantage of opportunities. So I just think that the road and the cycle is never ending when you talk about our young Black people. And I think that, you know, addressing the mental health and having resources and people to talk to that are specifically focused on this will help to change the trajectory of young people's lives.
Yeah, I take it very serious because I'm from Baltimore and I grew up without my father. So I think it might seem weird to people, but I really value the mental health space because our kids have so much trauma that I try to make rooms on here, you know, not to diagnose anybody, but let them vent, because the pandemic really showed me that kids, they need these type of spaces. So I try to protect it as much as possible and do a lot back where I'm from, especially with my guys and young ladies in the neighborhood. And then with the follow-up to that, with being a mental health advocate, a child advocate, a mentor, I've been kind of deemed in some of my circles in Baltimore as Mr. Lord Obama. So my lighthearted question was for you. Can you give us a funny maybe story of him or maybe one of y'all interactions?
Trying to think of something funny.
Or not funny, just something you've known, because like I said, that's Obama is the man. So it don't have to be funny, but just something you may have learned by talking to him or just being around his presence for people that haven't got that close to him. And thank you again for y'all for bringing me up. I really appreciate it.
Let me think. So I told that one, the 40-40, which is like my ultimate best story. A funny interaction. I mean, so I will say that just an interaction period. So that story I shared for me is one that stands out in my mind as an experience that I'll always remember. But just in general, just going back to kind of what, you know, Trish was saying about the feeling that she got in watching him, like, that's real, right? Like I've watched him day in and day out, especially on the campaign trail, make people feel seen. And I think that is a value and a quality that just as a person, period, for myself, and I'm sure for many of you, like someone feeling seen is everything, right? And so going back to even what you were talking about with mental health, like he has an ability to make you feel like you're the only person in the room. And that's, you know, regardless of how many people in the room, which is obviously everybody in Secret Service and all the things. And I think that that's that skill, that that level of authenticity is real. And it happens in every single, you know, level of engagement that I've ever witnessed him in. And I think that that's something that is, you know, that you would expect. But like, to your point of something that I've witnessed is I've seen it time and time again.
Thanks so much, Wayne. Bree has a question too, but I just want to kind of interject because I just got texted this question to somebody who is too shy to come up onto the locker room stage. But they were talking about sort of the inconsistency in support for other minorities. So we talked about Stop Asian Hate and that really being instigated after the Atlanta murders. But there was a lot of racial injustice that was happening and profiling that was happening towards the Asian community in the last year and longer, but particularly in the last year with the pandemic. And this fan feels that there wasn't the platform wasn't supported. There were, you know, there weren't a lot of, it wasn't a hot button topic to discuss or to use your platform for to try and instigate change. So I guess from a broader standpoint is how do other minority groups support each other and use whatever platform they have to do it better than we have in the past?
Yeah, that's such a great question, a great point. And I would say, as awful as this sounds, you know, as we saw, the reason why the hate against the Asian community was put, you know, at the forefront in the media is because, you know, Asian people lost their lives, right? And to me, it's a bigger issue, you know, than saying how can minorities support each other. It's why is it that bloodshed has to happen? Why is it that lives have to be taken away for it to even make the news or for it to make a conversation? And so to your point, you know, who asked the question is, it's so awful and unfortunate that these conversations just around straight discrimination, as you mentioned, that was happening because of, you know, the former president calling the virus by a name that was so racist and discriminatory, like that should have never happened, right? So like literally the perpetuation of hate against that community came directly from the leader of the country in a way that was so intentional that like then that should have been an issue, right? And so to your point about, you know, how do we support each other? I think, you know, in my opinion, when that was happening, you know, I was wondering myself, like, why isn't that, you know, that is not being called out to task by everybody, right? By every community, by literally like people would joke about how crazy he was to say these different things. But at the same time, I didn't hear people really bring it up in a way that, and it's weird because it's not like anything could have been done because he was just so out of control, you know, the former president. But like, to me, that was the opportunity, right? So when you're hearing that level of racist rhetoric being spewed on national TV every single day about the Asian community, that's when everybody should have band together at that moment and called that to task and, you know, again, created the petitions and done all the things. And I think it's unfortunate that it didn't happen then because I would have loved to see that's what was the catalyst to support the Asian community who's been discriminated against for so many years, along with the Latin community and the Middle Eastern community. And it goes on and on. And so I do think that was a missed opportunity. And I think now the upside is that people are banding together more and that you are seeing the different organizations come together more. And hopefully, as sad as it is that it takes the death of people to come to this point, it's also historically true to be the case, right? Like historically, tragedy has to happen, and that's not right, but it's where we live, unfortunately. And so now hopefully the goal is that we're all banding together now in a different way where there is solidarity amongst all minority communities around everything, right? So hopefully it's the Asian community supporting Black Lives Matter and vice versa, and all the communities supporting the Asian community now. And I think taking the momentum. So right now the spotlight is on the Asian community, and now we should take that and run that all the way as far as we can to support and change the experience for people in this country, for Asian people in this country. So it goes back to what I was saying earlier about taking advantage of the moment. It's like, as awful as it is, now we have to band around the Asian community and help them create spaces for them and increase the diversity of Asians across all of the different, you know, I'll speak about sports in particular. The numbers are so egregiously low for people in leadership that are Asian, like all of those different things right now, it should be full-fledged ahead. Like, why are we not talking about the inclusivity of Asian Americans into all of these different spaces? And I hope that that's what happens from this point.
Awesome. Thanks, Alexis. Brie.
Hey, Alexis. Thank you so much. This conversation has been amazing for the past hour and 45 minutes. While we are on the topic of kind of minorities, obviously, or minority groups, women are underrepresented in sports. It's no secret to you that Black women are the most underrepresented, underpaid, undervalued in really any industry. But I'm curious, as a Black woman, and I'm sorry if you answered any of this at the beginning, but how did you kind of get your start into the sports industry specifically? And then what were some challenges that you had to overcome that were unique to being a Black woman, and kind of how did you overcome them?
That's a great question. I mean, I got into sports. I was an athlete. So I was a softball player all through, you know, middle school, high school, college. I was a racquetball player. And then I went to school and played sports. And I always just knew that I wanted to do something within that realm. So I knew, you know, I was in entertainment, I was in politics, I was in all these different things. But after working for the Obama campaign and seeing how out of all of the demographic of people, out of all the entertainers, celebrities, influencers, that the athletes had this passion where they didn't know what to do with it, but they were so passionate about supporting the process, right? So passionate about learning about how to support the political process. And just personally, I was very intrigued by that. And after that, I said, you know, it would be really interesting to work for the NBA because these guys, like, they're dropping everything, right? Like, there was a lockout during that time, and you weren't supposed to be playing basketball at all during the lockout because there's no insurance on your body, and there was all these different things happening. And same with the W. The W wasn't supposed to be playing in unsanctioned games. And, you know, I was organizing all this stuff, and to have so many athletes say, I'm going to do what I need to do to support this Black president. Like, if the league wants to fine me, then that's fine. And so I was able to see a side of them that made me want to work with them, made me want to work with athletes and work at the NBA. And so when the opportunity arose, I, you know, someone from there reached out to me because I'd been planning, you know, a bunch of different things with the league because, you know, after basically what I'm describing is that the players say, I don't care what you think, league, I'm supporting this process. And therefore the league supported the players. So all of that just made me just love what the league stood for and what the players stood for. And so I kept in touch with the NBA and they reached out a couple of years later saying, hey, you know, we think you'd be a good fit to work with our players. We saw the kind of relationships that you have with them. And that's literally how I got the opportunity. I didn't know, it's not like I had, you know, some super like in, it was just some years passed and I, you know, I was having different phone calls with people and was told about this opportunity and moved to New York to do it. But I will say that as a Black woman, there's multiple different layers to that. And just to be really candid, you know, there's so many stigmas that are attached to being a woman working in sports. So whether or not it's from a sexual standpoint and people being like, oh, do players hit on you and do all these different things happen? And, you know, it, from there to, especially with what I do, I travel, I was on the road 3 weeks out of the month in team markets with guys. I was on the World Cup Olympic team for months in China with all the players. So I spent a lot of time with the guys. And the reality is that, you know, they have respect for me, right? And so, you know, from that experience of having to tell not the players, but to tell the rest of the the sports population, like, don't come at me with those types of conversations and comments because these guys respect me, right? Like they respect what I bring to the table. And so there was a lot of that that I think is just against women in general. Like we're just, you know, people look at you as like a wife or a girlfriend. It's like, no, I'm actually an executive and they trust my opinion. The other kind of elephant in the room is that within the NBA in particular, it's a majority Black league. And unfortunately, statistically, a lot of, you know, not just these players, but a lot of Black people in general are raised in single parent households coming from particular communities. And so, like, for me, that's a connectivity point. You know, I wasn't raised in a single parent household, but I'm a Black woman who leads from a place of love and resource and kindness. And I think from what I've been told, you know, reminds guys of like their sister or their aunt or their grandma. So there's this natural connectivity point that intimidates white male executives because they can never connect in the way that a Black person can connect with another Black person or a woman can connect. And so I'm able to say these things so confidently after so many years of trying to act like this wasn't the truth. And so, you know, and that was a confidence thing too. You're trying to like fit in and be like, oh, I don't know why we're connected or why we feel a connection. It's the same way why anybody feels a cultural connection with anyone else. And so there was a lot of that, of having to really just live in the space of, I have a secret sauce. And that was hard because that meant that I had some, not personal identity issues, but I had to have so many different sides to myself that was unfair. So imagine having to show up to work, not being your full authentic self, because you don't want people, not just to judge you, but you want to act like you don't have a competitive advantage when in reality we never have one. So like the fact that we had a little bit of a competitive advantage, like you should be able to live in that. And then just the other piece that I think is just obvious is that, you know, women aren't paid equally as Black women. We're not promoted in the same way. There's been letters and articles and all the things that everybody can look up to see just the rate of Black women that are executives, both at teams and leagues, which is super embarrassingly low compared to other positions. And again, that's not just with the NBA. I think we're better than other leagues, but like that doesn't feel good to know that you work really, really hard and that you can't ever get ahead in the way that you deserve because of just normal like cultural stigmas and discrimination and things that exist no matter what industry you're in. So, I mean, I could go on and on and on, but I think all of those things are true and how, you know, as sad as it is to say, it's like you deal with it and you strategize for how to still be great and how to still make an impact and how to not be so discouraged by all the things. So, you know, you're just having to keep your head down. And for me, it was, you know, having the encouragement of other people, a lot of reading, a lot of self-reflection, self-awareness. I became a life coach again, because one of the reasons was because of that. Like, it's hard. I've gone to therapy about it, like all the different things that for me, I wanted to use all the tools in my toolbox to be strong, so that I can withstand just all the things that we're up against as women who are trying to do great and don't necessarily have the support to do so.
That was incredibly insightful. Thank you so much for such a great answer. Really, really inspiring journey you've had. So I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, you and Trisha run. Serious. I'm over here like,
I can't run for president.
We're going to find a way. After this, we're going to make a way because y'all are doing it. Look, I'm never nervous. I was nervous to come up here. I was like, wow, the value, honestly. Because, this is not really a question. I don't want to step on cut anybody in line, but in our rooms, we make sure we protect women in sports, women in general. And I can remember being young and I'm telling her, oh, I like the WNBA. And people were like, making fun of me. And they see the bullying. Then me and Emily had a room with a young lady. And said she's leaving the company because of how they harass her. So it's just good to hear that when you're on the road, people are treating you with respect. We want more of that, but it's good to hear that at least, you know, we're getting it somewhere, but we got to make sure it's everywhere now. So just thank you for the value. Again, Title League, I share all y'all work. Y'all know that. It's just good that we get this type of value. And for the people missing out in this room, I feel bad for them. But this kind of Title League always motivates me, so I'm ready to run through a wall. We got to find some legislation to get Trish and Alexis as our next presidents. That was some great stuff. I'm telling you.
Thank you, Wayne. I guess I want to kind of throw out there too that you need women everywhere, not just at the top level. We need to encourage women and people of different ethnic backgrounds to sit on committees and agencies and boards and commissions. And I don't know what the equivalent to all of that in the States is, but you need them as CEOs and you need them to have high civil servant positions because that's where policy is developed and it's implemented. And, you know, there's a lot that you can do without actually having to put your name on a ballot and putting yourself out there to run. And sometimes the people who are behind the scenes are the ones that are making the most impactful changes every day. So it's teaching our kids civics, letting them know what the options are and what the job opportunities are, and making sure that our girls realize that they have just as much legitimacy there as our boys do.
Yeah, absolutely. Such great points.
Okay, well, I think that maybe this is it. I don't know. I'm getting all these kind of messages offline that, you know, they love the questions and they don't want to stop it. Like, I feel like we've intimidated them a little bit, Alexis. I feel bad for that. But we've also already taken almost 2 hours of your time. So I am going to thank the locker room crew who have come and gone and listened. And I got to see a few of your comments in the discussion group, and I appreciate them all. And most importantly, I want to thank you, Alexis, for taking up your time, not just today, but all of the time and hours that you've put in to make our world a little bit better and to make the people in the game that we love rise to their potential. I really appreciate that.
Anytime. You guys are just dope. I'm just so excited that I was able to join the Tidal League and have these just such a thoughtful conversation. It was just so much better and more enriched and more enlightening for myself, even to just talk through some of the things. So I appreciate the questions. I appreciate you guys and everyone who listened in. I'm just really grateful, and let's get to work. You know, there's so much work to do. So let's
do it,
guys. Yeah.
We got lots of work to do, Alexis. It's been a pleasure. This episode will release sometime this week, and we will let you know when it does, but just feel honored and privileged to have you on today. We've got work to do, so let's get at it.
Yes, awesome. Thank you, guys. You have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, good night, everybody.